a graduate course that I have under Professor Silfel, Research in American Church History.
Oh, yeah.
And I made a study of the early Sunday school movement in America, the first two or three decades, and that is the real early development until it was became a solid movement among the, I guess the Methodist Church was actually the strongest advocate of Sunday school.
Yes, I think the Methodist Church was.
Well, that's really interesting. In fact, it is that old. I didn't realize that it had, I mean, that there were actually Sunday schools in our church that old.
You see, there weren't very many, but there were some, very few, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And about the opposition in the other churches, that may have died down by 1850.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was wondering, what would you attribute that fact mostly to, the fact that these churches had Sunday schools? Was that too, could that be attributed to the fact that the other, at the Eastern Lutheran Church in Pennsylvania and so forth, had Sunday schools there, was promoting the development of Sunday school?
I think they felt the need of some kind of instruction, and of course, as you know from your study of the history of the Sunday school, there were Sunday schools long before Robert Ray.
Yes.
It was a normal thing when you had a group of people to gather on Sunday to take that opportunity to teach the children something. So there were Sunday schools way back. August Hermann Franke, I think, is supposed to have originated Sunday schools in Germany. But it was really the race movement that became, that put the stamp on the Sunday school and led to the organization of the type of Sunday school that we have today.
Yeah, I guess that is the birth of our modern Sunday school movement, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was, I think.
Yeah. Well, then I was just wondering how, if there had been influence from the Lutheran Church in the East, for instance, the Pennsylvania Ministerium?
And well,
I know that they already in 1830 gave the official recognition of the Sunday school movement by developing a Sunday school department in the church there that early.
The General Council or the Ministerium, I don't know which. I know that Schmauck, who I think was a member of the General Council, you know the General Council was more conservative than the General Synod,
mm-hmm.
much more so, and I believe then what they call a ministerium too. And Schmauck is credited with having been the first man that developed graded Sunday school lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Schmauck was conservative. He also put out a book, which now we would consider rather antiquated. I believe it gives the gospel lessons, and then there are questions there for our children.
Uh-huh.
And that was used in some Sunday schools. As a matter of fact, when the Sunday schools started to spring up in the Missouri Synod and the pastors had to look around for materials, they used Schmauck, or the General Synod, General Council's materials.
Okay.
At least I've read that.
Dr. Roy, in his catechetics, he tells of Sunday schools being formed as early as 1804, 1805 in some of the other synods, the Eastern Synods, and he says that the North Carolina Synod gave an official stamp through the Sunday school already as early as 1812.
Yes. Yeah, well, Roy has some interesting data, and it's certainly worthwhile looking into Roy as a historian. I think he did a very fine job.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose you got your material from his catechetics?
Yes.
Yes, that's a book that is well worth studying. In fact, it's one of the first books that I really studied when I came to St. Louis in 1933. Very much material with which we ought to be acquainted, and there are plenty of sources, although many of them are not accessible.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to mention one book that I'm sure it's in your SEM library. It is by Wiles of the ULC. I was acquainted with Dr. Wiles. He used to attend intersynodical meetings. Charles P. Wiles.
Is there a camera?
No, after a while. The title of the book is The Challenge of the Sunday School. It's out of print, but when it was still available, I recommended this very often to pastors who wrote in for information.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good book to, bring you up to date on the Sunday School, although it's now out of date and it's been superseded by the book by Heim, which is a much larger book. If you're not acquainted with it, I think you'll find it very helpful, although it has too much progressive education in it. That's the reason we didn't recommend it. At least I didn't, and Pastor Josman, my associate, felt the same way about it. But I'm sure you're using it out there in your courses. It's listed as a book.
Is that right?
And it has some good material in, but there's too much emphasis on experience, or we learn by doing, on activities versus the actual study of God's Word.
I was just wondering, in these early Sunday schools, I don't know if you say it or not, what was the primary purpose for founding these early Sunday schools, like, for instance, St. Matthew? Is it stated or anything why they feel some need other need beside the... Did they have parochial schools also, or...?
I think St. Matthew's had a parochial school. Now, the peculiar thing, when you get into the old Schulblatt, you find out that there was very, very much opposition to the Sunday school. But no one could stop Sunday schools from springing up, and as a result, our men had to play ball. Teachers were told that they ought to organize Sunday schools or hold Sunday school classes an hour on Sunday, because our children were children attending parish schools, mind you, were running to sectarian Sunday schools. So it was in some cases a measure of self-defense. Now, I don't know if that happened in St. Matthew's locality, but I know that I've met with that several times in the old Schulblatt.
Do you know whether these Sunday schools were the Sunday School of St. Matthew's was an individual incentive and project, or was it a project of the church? I mean, more or less coming from the church.
I suppose it was initiated by the pastor with the permission of the congregation. Mm-hmm. Now here in Wiles, before I forget about it. On page 29 of the Challenge of the Sunday School, he says, it would seem that the first school in Philadelphia was organized in 1791, in Boston in 1791, in New York in 1793, in Pittsburgh in 1800, and in Baltimore, 1804.
These are Lutheran Sunday schools?
Well, now you'll have to consult the context.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they are, but somewhere he also mentioned St. Matthew's Sunday School.
I see.
And he gives the dates for the organization of some other Lutheran Sunday schools, I think.
Uh-huh.
A Lutheran school was organized in Christ Church, York, PA in 1819. That may mean Sunday school. That's a school. Sunday schools were of comparatively slow growth among us up until 1840, about which time St. Matthew's and St. James Churches, New York City, and other influential congregations introduced the work.
Did they call them Sunday schools?
No, I can't tell you that. I would assume that they did. Because I think that was at that time already was the name of the institution.
Yeah, the reason I ask, because the early Sunday schools that were founded in our country, in the United States, before the Robert Rice movement, they were Sunday schools in the sense that our Sunday schools today, but they weren't. I don't think they were called Sunday schools.
Mm-hmm.
They were called probably like Christenlehrer or Kinderlehrer as the Lutheran Church.
Yeah, that's right.
Especially in New England, they had these. In my reading, I noticed that. They state that several Sunday schools were responded as early as the 17th, middle of the 17th century. And mm-hmm. they were similar to the Christian era in Lutheran Church in the East, in Pennsylvania. The mm-hmm. fact is that they taught, I mean, they were completely religious.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't start, it wasn't like what the way the Robert Reich movement started out. It was a movement toward general education of the poor.
Robert Reich's Sunday, that type of Sunday school, I don't think was very common over here.
No, no.
I think almost from the beginning, as much as I know from my reading, the idea was to give them some religion.
Yeah. The way it compared in the beginning, from my reading, was concerned and. In this beginning here, the fact that they tried to gather the children of the poor who had unable to receive any education during the week and give them some smattering of education, reading and writing and so forth.
Yeah.
And of course, they used religious materials almost wholly in that instruction.
That's right. I suppose you know why there was so much opposition to the Sunday school in the Missouri Synod.
Well, that's where I wanted to come to next. I was wondering about the forces that promoted the Sunday school movement and the forces that hindered the Sunday school movement in our synod.
I'm convinced that the opposition was came mainly from the basic philosophy of our forefathers. They believed that a child should receive his education from earliest childhood in a Christian environment, and that a Lutheran should attend a Christian school, according to Luther's saying, religion is not taught in the school, I counsel parents not to send their children.
Mm-hmm.
That was I didn't quote him correctly. You can find that statement in almost any of these little books with quotations from Luther. But our fathers often quoted that statement, and they believed that a Lutheran should receive his education in a Lutheran or Christian environment, and for that reason you must have a parish school, and you must have a Lutheran high school, and so on, and up through the university. Of course, when it comes to the university, then you assume that the individual, if he has attended Christian schools, is fairly well grounded, and you can risk sending him into an atmosphere that may have no religious overtones at all, that is very secular and even anti-Christian. But that was their idea. Bring up children who are going to remain loyal members to the church, they need thorough instruction. And they saw they were not getting it here. By 1847, when they came over, the public schools were underway already.
Yes.
Let's see, Horace Mann's anniversary was celebrated about 7 or 8 years ago. That was his, was that his?
Centennial,
I believe.
Yes, I know. It was the turn of the century already, that at the 19th century, that the public schools began to become secularized in there.
Oh, yes. Yes, that happened. That started along, I think, about 1890.
There was a definite transition.
And, of course, there was a movement prior to that, and it is ascribed by some to the fact that the sectarians were too tenacious in holding their opinions, and school authorities were so embarrassed that they finally decided we might as well get rid of religion entirely if we can.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened in many schools.
Yes.
In Pennsylvania, where I grew up, we had Bible reading. That's still required in Pennsylvania.
Is that right?
And we have prayed the Lord's Prayer together, and there were some other prayers and also some hymns that were sung.
I was going to ask you, why didn't they feel that Sunday school could have added to the Christian instruction of their children?
I'll have to get something for my throat if I can.
Want me to turn that off a little bit?
Yeah, I can see.
I should have picked up something.
To the National Council over to Chase Hotel.
Uh-huh.
I went there Sunday already. And it was very breezy in the meeting hall. And I started to... that night, my throat started to feel sore.
Uh-huh. I suppose.
I don't get colds very often.
Let's see. What I was asking is, I wonder why the Bloomfield at the Sunday School could have added to the Christian education of children. Was there something about Sunday School that they felt was just Christian, that it was tentatively secular, or brought in false doctrine?
Well, if you read the history of the American Sunday School movement, how it changed from time to time, and what a wretched institution it was in many cases, you can realize how our fathers came to take the position they do. They figured that children are learning almost nothing in those Sunday schools. Mm-hmm. Many of them were simply an hour of play, and some fads were introduced. In fact, just like the public school, the Sunday school went in for the fads, and so our fathers figured that even if you did have a very good Sunday school. One writer in the Schulblatt says, if you had the best possible Sunday school, you still would not be able to accomplish very much in 35 or 40 or 50 minutes in Sunday morning. And that, in general, was the reason why they opposed the founding of Sunday school. You see, they still hoped that you could establish a parish school alongside of every church,
mm-hmm.
or nearly every church. That was their ideal or their goal. And they felt that if they once gave in and gave the green light to the Sunday school movement, many of the schools would fold up.
Dr. Roy makes something about the wherever the Sunday school came in, parochial school lost out. And he attributes it, though he relays the blame to the influx of the English language. Now, I wonder what influence that had in our church. The fact that they associate the English language with the Sunday school, was it?
The Missouri Synod. held to the German longer than any of the other church groups.
Yeah.
General Synod, General Council, Iowa Synod, I think all of them admitted the German language earlier than our own Synod did. And we couldn't I should say the English language. We could continue to use the German language because we did have many schools. But I suppose the spread of the English language among immigrants led to the folding up of many schools.
Mm-hmm. Then what did that have to do with promoting the Sunday school, the English language, to be a transition
from German to English? What influence that have in
the increasing the development of Sunday school in our center? Well, how about what kind of role did that play, do you think?
You mean the English language?
Yeah, the transition from German to English in our church. I mean, that didn't come, it was gradual. But
well,
what kind of role that played in the actual development of Sunday school? If you remember that from your own experience, you probably do, because a lot of that came about within your lifetime.
Well, I would say that the German persisted for years in member communities. In Pennsylvania, for example, my father preached English about twice a year, and he didn't like to preach English at all. He was a very good sermonizer in German, but it was pitiful in English.
Same difficulty we had today.
Yes, that's right. So,
if we preach, now a lot of us would preach, I mean, the young fellows, well, if we had to preach two sermons a year, that'd be more the same difference, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's correct. So, the German language persisted. There were not too many preachers who were fluent in English. But the men that were in English, who were working in English, they constituted the English Synod, which later became the English District. And these men that were in the English District were very much abused by some of the Germans because you were considered disloyal if you started a Sunday school. Dr. Dahlman told me that, for example, he was in the East, and English spread much more rapidly in the East, I think, than it did farther west. Here in the West, you could seal up a community of Germans pretty well, and if you have a school, you could maintain the German language. But in the East, in Pennsylvania, where I lived that night, all the older people in the congregations were German, and they thought the sermon had to be in German. And our catechism, our Sunday school lessons were in German.
Well, I mean, it's even more recent than ever. I grew up in a German community myself, in southern Illinois, here in Hoffman, Illinois.
Oh,
yes. I can say there's a sort of a German community in Minden,
Wilkins,
and they were practically isolated. Yet in my childhood, I mean, and the services were entirely in German. They had maybe one service in English once a month. Mm-hmm. Even that's in my childhood.
Oh, yes.
That's only back in the early 30s, right? So.
Yes, well.
And the school was taught in German quite a bit of it. We had a German catechism in my early grades. I had the Bibel, but the
Bibelgeschichte.
Yeah, we had Bibelgeschichte, and we also had the reader. Our first reader was in the Bible.
Feeble, yes, I remember that Feeble.
So German really stopped a long time in Korea. I mean, it's only now they only have about two thirds in German a month now, and the rest in English.
Well, it was the First World War that gave the quieters to German in many localities. These people that thought they couldn't listen to an English sermon and profit by it found out after they had to sit there for 6 months that it wasn't so bad after all. My first charge was in Ontario, and there was quite a bit of tension there. And the commandant, a very supercilious Canadian, gave the good sound advice, as he said, to quit preaching German. And I consulted my district president, and he said, well, if there's going to be any trouble in that locality, and they have the armory there, and they easily get wrought up, why, you just drop the German. So I dropped the German, and I had a German family. In fact, I boarded with them. A Burger was her name. They just couldn't see how they could sit there in church and not hear any German sermons. But after 6 months, Mrs. Burger confided in me, and she said, since we've had German English now for 6 months, I just can't say whether I learned German better or English. But in my home congregation there in Pennsylvania, you see how the German persisted.
The younger generation, the children, were all speaking German out in the street. They were growing away, speaking English, I mean.
English, yeah.
They were all growing away from the German language. And provision should have been made for them, but my father didn't do it. He had a German school in the summer. We learned catechism and
Bible history in German and
some hymns. We used the Sonntagsschulharfe for singing.
And
he figured if we went to German school and we heard German in the home, why, it'd be all right to confirm us in German. So we were using German Sunday school lessons. I think they came from Reading, PA. The Pilger Buchhandlung published much of this material that my father used.
Mm-hmm. Is that the earliest in the synod? Or did you say Schmalk? He was not in the synod, though, was he?
Schmalk was a professor in the General Council.
General Council.
Yes.
These Sunday school lessons were not produced, though.
Our first Sunday school lessons were printed in 1910.
That was even before official organization of a board for Sunday school.
Yes.
That was came in 1914, didn't it?
Yes. Now, I'm going to let you have some of these notes of mine if you'll bring them back. Be sure to return them. That's all I have.
I don't
have extra copies.
I dictated
this material, and it isn't organized or anything. But it will give you some ideas of what was being done in the English Synod.
The English Synod was working on Sunday school lessons about around 1890 to 1895.
Got the name here.
The name's here somewhere. Well, it doesn't matter. But they were published
some Sunday school lessons and recorded on them. But the course never developed into a permanent program. I think they simply discontinued. They gave up. The English Synod published
the Bible history,
what was known as the comprehensive Bible history. They spent a lot of time on that.
They published
the first Sunday school hymnal.
They published
various types of services.
Christmas services, for instance,
were active in that way. And I think they published
the first English catechism. I'm not sure, but you see, if you have
the catechism and the Bible history,
that's all you need.
And that's all many preachers needed.
Now, Dr. Sile
told me that he finally succeeded in getting permission to publish the Sunday school lessons here. He felt that there was a need for them. Many of our
people were using Soterian lessons published in Buffalo
by Hunzer.
Hunzer
also brought out a hymn book with English and
German
version side by side, so that
in
the mixed audience you could sing in two languages, which we used to do once in a while. But the faculty was strongly opposed to Sunday school lessons. Dr. Metzger, our homiletician,
was a strong school. Remember, he mentioned the Sunday school.
Oh, he did it with a smirk on his face, and his face had a sarcastic aspect to begin with. He didn't have to twist it up to in order to show that he was talking sarcastically, but always an exaggerated smirk when he talked about the Sunday school. He called it a miserable note they health. And what would that be in an emergency measure? That isn't quite it, but that's how little he thought of the Sunday school. And he always played up the school. When I left the seminary in 1914, I left it with a feeling that the Sunday school didn't amount to anything much. Well, Mr. General, Dr. Sproul told me that he finally got the faculty to agree that they would remain neutral. And so he went ahead and published the first Sunday school lessons. They came out in 1910 or 1911.
Yeah, the rest there were still when the school received its major impetus right in the English district.
They had to have materials.
Yeah.
And the English Senate had a publishing house over in Pittsburgh. That's my home, Pennsylvania, and I was in the publishing house a number of times.
That was over the English Senate then.
The English Senate.
It was addressed to our church or Senate.
Yeah, but
along with the Ohio and Iowa.
No, they were closer to us than that. They wanted to join. Now, I can't give you this accurately. But they wanted to join the Missouri Synod, and it was Dr. Walter who gave them the advice, since they were entirely English, that they should organize a synod of their own.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been better if these English congregations at that time already would have been taken in and absorbed. Now we still have the English district spread all over the city.
Excuse me, you can get through here.
I was wondering what the development we see in the different factions in the Senate, for instance, like in Ohio and Iowa and the English Senate there. What was the, did it develop quicker in those than in the English rather than in Ohio and in the Iowa? See, they were all together, weren't they, before the turn of the century? Wasn't Iowa part of the Senate too? The Iowa Senate?
Of our Senate?
Yes.
Well, when did they break? 1885, was it?
Yes, I think so.
1885, along in there.
I wonder what the development was in those bodies early.
Well, Ohio Synod had quite a bit of German. At one time, Ohio was pretty lax, at least one of the men who later wrote to me and told me he'd like to join the Missouri Synod, and is in our Synod today. He's a neighbor of mine out in Indiana. He said he hopes our men wouldn't be too severe on the Ohio Synod men. He said you ought to consider what we came up from.
Yeah.
In other words, the Ohio Synod was had been rather liberal too at one time, although I don't know if they were ever as liberal as the bodies in constituting the ULC now.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were very liberal.
Did the Sunday school there receive? It developed there earlier, of course, than in our church.
The Ohio Synod had. I think they were reached English-speaking people earlier,
mm-hmm.
and I think they developed English congregations earlier too, because the Sunday school lessons were published long ago in the Ohio Senate, I couldn't tell you just what chair.
Well, then, in a sense, you can sort of attribute the development of Sunday school, I mean, where it was swept in, to the English influx of the English language, to the transition to English.
Yes, you could.
I mean, it
that
like it follows that pattern. I mean,
yeah,
I wonder if there's some kind of a ratio that we can establish. I mean, with the English was.
Well, of course, you must bear in mind that there were German Sunday school lessons. Our Synod published German Sunday school lessons, and they griped like everything when we decided not to print them anymore.
Is that right?
There was after I came to St. Louis, we had requests from, for instance, Northern Canada for German Sunday school lessons. The ULC published German Sunday school lessons. And the ALC, I'm quite sure, did. So these larger Lutheran bodies certainly had the German Sunday school lessons, and they could have perpetuated the German Sunday school. But it was simply a matter of fact that German would die out. It was impossible to keep up a language, a foreign language, generally.
Yes.
And we were more successful, I think, in the Missouri Synod because we had our schools.
Yeah.
And that's the reason it was possible in 1948. It was our first Bud Ball meeting. I believe it was 48. It was possible to find quite a few men in the Missouri Synod who knew the German languages and could go over there and speak German at these meetings and prepare essays. I went in 49, and I still remember that one man or two men from the ULC were absent the first day, and someone inquired and said, oh, they had a stop in Paris. They have a friend there that's going to translate their lectures into German. Now, none of our men had to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They all knew enough German to write their essays in German and to carry on conversation and also to argue in German.
Yeah.
But that's, I think, due to
help.
The fact that we had schools and German school books. And until the First World War, we were doing a pretty good job teaching German in our schools. Then we got cold feet, and you once drop a language, it's very hard to restore it again.
Yeah.
There's no reason why red-blooded Americans shouldn't learn two languages.
Then the war actually has something to, there is a change, definite change there, with the advent of the First World War in the transition from English to German to English. Wonder what kind of effect did that have on the Sunday school? Did the development come more swiftly after that in our Synod?
Well, I don't know.
Here
was a situation in many places. My first charge was up in Ontario. I had a mission in St. Catharines, and I had an old German, old Lutheran congregation out in the country, a place called Jordan, and that was dying out. When I went around there making calls and becoming acquainted, I met quite a few people with German names, and they were in other church. There were a lot of these, they're not Mennonites. We had Mennonites there too, but there was another sect, I can't recall their name, very simple sort of sect and religious, and our people had joined their churches. I met quite a few, and when I'd ask how does come you left the Lutheran church, oh, we had German and we couldn't understand it anymore, and so we left.
They
couldn't understand the German anymore. So went to these other churches. One, there was a Methodist. I think some joined a Methodist. And there may have been people in other churches too, but that's where we were losing out, that we had nothing to offer them. One woman out in this country church, Sensky was their name, she told me she had sat in that church, I don't know how many years, it was at least 10 years, listening to German sermons, and she was an English girl.
Mm-hmm.
A very fine woman. But to to my mind, that was an injustice. I was there only a short time when we cut out German altogether.
You think that has something to do with the bringing in, then, of the Sunday school?
Yeah, I think that the English was spreading very rapidly, and it was impossible to keep up the German language, so they organized Sunday schools.
Was there this situation common? Did they have Sunday school conducting English and then have a German service? Was that situation?
Well, I think by that time they were having German and English services both, where the preachers could preach it. Now, take my father. My father couldn't preach in both languages.
Yeah.
He just couldn't hold an audience when he tried to preach English. But there were quite a few men. Later generation. All right, Phoebe, just lay one here if you want to, in case I...
All right.
The Sunday school spread, one reason why it's mushroomed, that's what it did in the Missouri Synod, it's mushroomed, was that we did, at the seminary, we had that drilled into us, that we are educators, not merely pulpit orators, as most sectarian preachers think that's their main job. But it was made very clear to us that we are educators, teachers, and that we should miss no opportunity to teach. And the only time you could get the group together, that is a younger group up to confirmation age, was on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a natural, it's the simplest thing to do the job on Sunday and have it done. You've got the parents there for church, you can get the children, they bring the children, and if there's Bible class, then you can get the parents into Bible class too. Although we didn't push the Bible class nearly as much as we should have pushed it way back.
Not until recently.
No, it was usually dependent upon the initiative of the pastor, whether a Bible class was organized or not.
How early did the idea of the Sunday school as a mission agency develop? When did that...
the Sunday school as a missionary agency, that's a very good point that you've raised. If you will read the get the Theological Quarterly for I guess it's 1899, there is a very good article there by A.L. Graepner, the father of our Theodore Graepner, recently deceased. And when I read that, I was really surprised that, considering everything, a man living way back at that time could be so fair as he was in presenting the Sunday school. It's a long article. It's very well written. Now, what did you ask me?
Well, the missionary. How soon did that
involve? Well, there, Graepner points out then that in this article already, that the Sunday school is a missionary agency for children. And earlier than that, I think, there, and I can't tell you what article it is, but it's in the Schulblatt, is an article in which the author says that for our own children, we need the parochial school. They should have the whole loaf, but the crumbs that fall from the table, they are for children who aren't so fortunate, and even for their parents. So they are the little dogs that eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table. Now, that statement occurs somewhere. I've repeated it. You may have come across it.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, though, that idea was not very broad. Throughout Senate, was it?
The reason, you see, they didn't want to concede that the Sunday school was which should serve as an educational agency.
Yeah.
Graepner didn't want to concede it, because if you once conceded it, then you were saying it can be either or. If school is too much trouble, why then you just start
a
Sunday
school. Yeah, into a faction who were against, didn't care to support a parochial school.
Yeah, that's right.
The
Sunday school is a line of least resistance.
Yes.
I've told groups already, and I think I've had that written somewhere, some article, but if a congregation really made it a matter of conscience to give the children the Christian education that they ought to have and didn't want to start a day school, They would supplement the Sunday school with vacation Bible school and weekday religious instruction and Saturday school. And by the time they got finished and found out what a nuisance is to maintain all of these agencies, they'd say, well, we might as well spend a little money and start a school. But the Sunday school is very easy to organize. You get a handful of people there, you order some Sunday school lessons and a few hymn books, and you get started.
I think it is doing a tremendous job as far as the missionary capacity there.
Yes, it is.
I think that's
But what we did is we said the Sunday school is a missionary agency, but we lost sight of the missionary purpose. Because you go way back, well, when I was a boy, back in Pennsylvania, Sunday school couldn't have been a missionary agency. The Lutherans were all clannish, as far as I know. The Norwegians hung together, the Swedes hung together, the Danes hung together, and the Germans were an isolated community. I remember, well, even later, my father had a congregation near Pittsburgh. And until I got in there and assisted him and started English, why, we seldom had any outsiders in that church. And they didn't feel that they were wanted. And mm-hmm. So we're sticking to the German language. We couldn't do mission work.
You actually mentioned that the Lutherans, the isolated, were clannish. I was wondering if there's any place where I can find out information, perhaps you yourself had that information, that where the Sunday school reaches greatest development. I think it was probably the English people in the English that reached its earliest development impetus in our church, but I was wondering how these other different ethnic groups, how this development Sunday school compared in these different groups, German, Norwegian, and so forth.
I'm sorry, I can't.
Is there information available, statistics showing, how that the different languages and ethnic groups affected the development of Sunday school in the synod?
I don't know. Now, when Miles wrote his book here and gave some statistics, he referred to Lutheran, various Lutheran churches, but he had no study, and I don't believe anyone else had made that study. But you no doubt will find, if you write to the headquarters of the various Lutheran bodies, I think they'll give you some information. The ALC is celebrating an anniversary this year. I can't tell you what it is. Is it the ALC? Yes, well, let's see. If you would write to ALC headquarters and ULC and ELC, Evangelical Lutheran Church, and then Augustana is Swedish, ELC is Norwegian. It might get some good.
I was wondering, if you could put some like that into a piece like that, it might be interesting to show how it developed in different ethnic groups. Where it received its greatest impetus.
Yeah.
And I think probably it would show that it did receive its greatest impetus among the English-speaking people, where the English language received its greatest. Also, I was wondering in that same area, in which districts the Sunday school would receive its greatest and earliest development.
I couldn't tell you that. I doubt whether you can find.
You don't know, there probably aren't any statistics available showing the development of the Sunday school in the individual districts.
The way back, you mean?
Yeah, probably. Not just going back to the turn of the century.
If I were you, I would take the statistic, go to the statistical yearbook. And see what you can find. While you're here, I'll let you take my notes over there. If there's anything in this file that you want, you can take it along.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you'll bring it back. And if you take some notes, you'll find some data there that that I haven't mentioned. If you would ask the right question, then I would mention maybe. But in a conversation like this, you you're bound to skip something.
Sure, sure.
I know I took some notes. I took the old statistical yearbooks. I was trying to find out when, for the first time, they mentioned the Sunday school. And I think you'll find a few references in my notes. But you could, if you don't want to go back to where they were, the statistical yearbook was German, start where it's English and see what you can find there.
Mm-hmm.
The figures would be very interesting.
Yes, I imagine it would be. That would make, really would add something to a study like this, if you could give some kind of a graph showing the development of the Sunday school in different areas and show.
Now, our girl could, I don't think she has everything up to date, and I don't know whether she has copies of the material, but she could give you, will you just tell her, I want those Sunday school statistics, that sheet with Sunday school statistics. Will you tell her that? We never found out what happened to the statistics we collected some years ago in the questionnaire that sent out to pastors. I put the question, when was your Sunday school organized? And somebody around here, we were still at the publishing house, all right, can you say? We were still at the publishing house, and somebody got a throwing outfit, I guess. I know once Delhern's daughter was his secretary, and my secretary had a whole lot of stuff. They were, I saw waste baskets there. What are you doing? We're cleaning out the files.
I guess that happened more than once. I mean,
well,
quite often.
And I told my girl, you put everything back into that file and you don't take a thing out until you ask me about it.
I think that's probably a lot of difficult, in a lot of areas of our church. We didn't realize the importance of statistical material like that until so very, very late.
We had a man out there that was a curator, the Historical Society.
Yeah.
That burned up stuff. P.E. Kretschmann told me once that he got in there to straighten things out, I believe. And this man had inquiries going way back over a year from people that doing research, and the letters were still there, some of them unopened. They found a bunch of stuff. Kretschmann found this, I think, Paul Kretschmann, partially burned, valuable things.
I know, I guess that's one of the most frustrating things about that curatorship of the Historical Museum, Professor Zilflo. He often speaks about that. He's trying to, find dead, he goes along trails trying to find that material, and he runs into a dead end where the material's just been tossed away.
Well, even the publishing house has never been able to get a complete file of a Lutheran witness.
Yeah.
Now, my uncle, Dr. Frank of Evansville, was the one that started Lutheran witness. And I'm pretty sure that he would have had a complete file. Had two sons in the ministry. Was in Kansas, and he died rather young. He's been dead for many years. And Theodore was in the ministry, and he resigned. He was my neighbor in Indiana, and he inherited a lot of books from my Uncle Frank. When my grandfather attended the Log Cabin College down in Perry County. In fact, he was the first graduate. And he had quite a few books. When my granddad died, Uncle Frank wrote to all the sons, and he said, I'll either give you the books, your share, or give you $35. Well, the men that weren't preachers, why should they buy Gerhard Slotzi or anything like that?
Mm-hmm.
So they took the cash, and Uncle Frank got all those extra books.
Oh boy, a valuable collection, I imagine.
Yeah, some very good books. Well, and his son, he quit the ministry, had very bad case of asthma. And I went down there a couple of years ago. I thought I'd buy some of those books, and you know what he'd done with them? Dumped them.
Yeah.
A complete set of Luther's Erlangen edition of Luther. And a work I wanted, a Latin work, it's a commentary on Paul's epistles. What's the name of this fellow? I've got one up there now. It picked up at the publishing house. It was being dumped. It's Latin, but it isn't hard to read. He had that, I know he had it. And he had Gerhardt's Harmony. And Spurgeon's Exposition of the Psalms. And they didn't have much room. He so told his son one day to take these things and put them in the trunk. And they were making a fill down in the city somewhere, and that's where he dumped them. That's where they were buried. And I'm pretty sure that all the old Lutheran witnesses were in there. Now, I don't know if anyone has a complete file of them. We can't get a complete set here.
No.
We've been trying to get all the periodicals. Well, here are statistics that go back to 38. You could look at this and see if it gives you any information. You'll find for quite a while we were increasing our enrollment at the rate of about 10,000 a year. And there was a slump right here, is the general slump in Sunday schools everywhere. Why we slumped, I could never figure out, although there were fewer marriages and the birth rate had fallen, fewer baptisms, but I could never figure why we should drop down into the minus column there.
Mm-hmm.
And since that time, the Sunday schools in general have been increasing their enrollment. We got up to where we increased by 30,000 a year. I hope that the next statistics will show that we added 50,000 a year.
That'll probably make an interesting graph showing the growth of the Sunday school somewhere. Did the Sunday school fall as far back as the organization of the board, Sunday school board?
Oh yeah, there are some Sunday schools I think around 1880. There are a few statistics. I'm pretty sure I mentioned them somewhere.
Well, that'd be interesting to go back that far and maybe give a five-year graph every 5 years to show the growth of the Sunday school.
I want Pastor Mahler is working in one of our rooms here. He's working for the officials of Synod, projecting into the future to see how much manpower we'll need. And I talked to him about working out statistically a picture of the Sunday school and projecting 5 or 10 years into the future to see how many teachers we will need. You know, you can do a lot if you can excite people, get them, arouse them for greater enthusiasm about something, if you can show them what the needs of the future will be. But you could take figures just as you have them here and say every 5 years, if you want to, you could take I can give you a copy of our latest teacher training program, teacher training report. I get out a report every year. I'm secretary of our committee.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in that too, that area right there. I thought I might, don't think I'll cover the whole area from the beginning to the present day, but I would like to maybe include a chapter. I think it'd be good, interesting, complete a chapter on the area of teachers in the Sunday school. On the first.
Will you bring me the latest teacher training committee report, maybe one copy?
I see the teacher training was organized in 36, wasn't it?
Well, that's when we asked Bacon to appoint a committee.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it'd be very interesting to give a study on that too. I think it's chapters on the work in that area to make the teachers qualify. I mean, really, there was some difficulty, and it still is in Sunday school. Qualified teachers.
That's always going to be a problem, to how to get teachers that are conscientious and really. You can take that along, and we have other reports. I don't know if we have duplicates, but you could come here and look at, see if there's anything you want to trace from year to year. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to devote a day coming down there and going through some of the materials in the library. I noticed a number of articles in that. There are a list of things by Pastor Kramer on the fact of teacher training, even back in the late 20s or so there, and the efforts that were being devoted to that.
You could mention that for years at the our conventions, Synod admonished preachers by all means to take teacher training seriously, to conduct weekly teachers' meetings if at all possible. That's been urged as long as I can remember. Of course, we have it in our report. We see that it gets in there. I don't think we've ever omitted it. And that way it gets before Synod. But Synod has done that every year, and even when we didn't have a teacher training program. You'll find a few hints in these materials. And if you take the reports of the English Synod, I think they're all out in the same library. Take them from about 1888 up to 1900, and see what you can find in there. I borrowed mine from Dr. Hemeter once. I borrowed those copies. I didn't know where to get them,
mm-hmm.
And I went to get some. See what the English Synod had done in the way of promoting Sunday school. And Hemeter, one of these men that got his bumps, like Dahlman and Morehart and Kreinader. They all lived at a time when the Sunday school was still Cinderella in the Missouri Synod. And so Hemeter, if he'd be living, he could tell a person quite a bit about the Sunday school.
Do you recall what the at the beginning, when the board was first being organized, the opposition and so forth, that, I mean, what was the opposition then? How was it received?
Well,
I mean...